And on Wednesday, we check in with Anna DeVlantis for This Week in Chicago History and talk about legends. 24 years ago this week, we lost quite a sports legend here in Chicago, didn't we, Anna?
How about it, Bob? 24 years ago, November 1st, 1999, Walter Payton died at the age of 46. Just think about that. I know we know this story so well, but you think age of 46, he died of a rare liver disease or rare big problems he had suffered, actually quite silently for several years leading to his death.
Mm-hmm.
But it claimed his life way too soon. And even though cut short, you think about the accomplishments this legend, this person had done for not only the sport and the game of football, but for fans and all the personal connections he made just in such a limited time, the lives he touched, just unbelievable. His son, Jarrett Payton, I don't know if you saw this, Bobby, he posted a tribute to his dad on social media just a couple days ago on the anniversary of his death, and it prompted a lot of Bears fans, a lot of people across, well, everywhere, not just the Chicago area, to jump on and just recall their personal memories of either meeting this legend or just a moment they had with Walter Payton or something that they remembered from the game and how they just brightened their lives as Bears fans. And interesting, one person in particular jumped into the conversation. The punky QB known as McMahon, he posted a video of Payton throwing a touchdown to him, one of his personal favorite memories. And here's a clip I dug up of McMahon describing that play, but also what it was like to work with Walter Payton.
I think I caught three or four touchdowns from Walter. I can't remember how many, but yeah, it was always fun to, you know, get away from all the big guys and get out there. You know, basically I was wide open every time because they were always chasing Walter, so... I remember we ran that play once down in Tampa. We ran it about on the 50-yard line. You know, I catch the ball, and there's nobody on, you know, from the middle of the field to where I was. And by the time I got down to the 10, there was about three guys ready to hit me. And I told Mike, please don't run that play outside the 20 anymore. I can't run that damn far.
Walter could do everything. He, of course, could run, but he could pass. And he could kick. I remember that as well. Andy, you remember that? He could punt.
He could punt. He could
place kick.
Receiving. I mean, it's just, yeah. He did everything.
Yeah.
I've forgotten about throwing the touchdowns, though. I just saw that. You go look it up again if you want to just have some fun and laughs, because it's just incredible to watch him.
Yeah, I mean, I miss him, and he was such a fun guy to be around, too. Harrison is a street we know, but we don't know much about who it was named after, do we?
Isn't this funny? Turn of the century, 1893, go way back to the Wayback Files for this one, Bob, because back then, the mayor was Carter Harrison, five-time mayor, super popular, known as the People's Mayor. Chicago was the center of the universe, pretty much, at that time. The World's Fair, the Columbian Exposition was being held here, and it was 3 days left. 3 days left until the close of the fair when Carter Harrison was murdered in his mansion on Ashland Street. His staffers let this gentleman in. He shot him three times. He said later in his confession to police it was because Carter Harrison, the mayor, wouldn't make him corporation counsel, but I think there were other factors. Mental illness and infatuation with the mayor were also cited. But he became a martyr of sorts, and so Harrison, you're right, they named a street after him. There's a big monument for him on West Randolph Street, kind of over by the United Center in a small park, still there to this day. They named a high school for him, and then later his own son became mayor and also served five terms. So a bit of history there when you see the name Harrison around town.
Anna, let's talk about the famous political upset this week in Chicago history.
This was a major journalism blunder, and gosh, still studied by journalism students, still remembered today. The Chicago Tribune printed its infamous headline this week, Dewey Defeats Truman. That headline that obviously was incorrect. Things just didn't look that way at the time. And there were a lot of different factors that played into this. There were new printing presses. There was a strike. There were all kinds of things. But in the end, though it was not expected to be close and though it looked exactly the opposite was going to happen, the Tribune, under pressure, printed that headline. And they weren't the only ones, Bob. This is interesting, too. But they were the most prominent paper, for sure. And the Trib was the one that President Truman held up for the cameras the next morning, laughing about it and the erroneous headline and that he had celebrating his victory. Also didn't help that the Tribune had called Truman a nincompoop in an editorial. Great word. Don't use it enough. But they didn't like him and they didn't endorse him. And they chose Dewey and kind of wanted Dewey and thought Dewey would win. So if you look back at the politics of the time, we pulled some great clip here. A Tom Brokaw anchored documentary about the Dewey-Truman race and this astounding upset victory.
Crisscrossing the nation by train, Truman set out on an aggressive re-election campaign that produced the most famous battle cry. Give them hell, Harry blasted what he called the Republican Do-Nothing Congress.
Give the Republicans complete control of this government, you might just as well turn it over to the special interests, and we'll start on a boom and bust cycle and try to go through just what we did in the 20s.
Truman put up a tough fight, but he was a clear underdog, and as the campaign drew to a close, almost no one thought that he could win. In fact, by the end of that October, Truman appeared to be so far behind, pollsters had stopped taking polls. But on election night, a major turning point, Truman had pulled off a truly unexpected victory and happily held aloft the Chicago Tribune's famously wrong headline. History was made, and for the first time, it played out on television.
As Governor Thomas E. Dewey today conceded the presidential election to President Truman under a New York dateline.
Famous picture. Tribune didn't need that kind of publicity, though,
no.
I guess. let's go back 7 years ago.
Sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in the World Series. And maybe sooner than we think.
Well, that was 1991. It wasn't soon, but we made it.
We waited a bit, didn't we, Bob? But it's interesting because this is the anniversary of the Cubs World Series, November 2nd, 2016, to be exact. The Cubs did it. They went all the way. They broke the curse, reversed the 108-year championship drought. And it's so interesting because I believe that a lot of diehard Cubs fans will remember exactly where they were that day, exactly how they felt at that moment in time. How about you, Bob? Do you remember? Were you at the game?
I was watching on TV, and I remember falling off the couch when Chapman gave up a homer late in the game. But I picked myself back up.
You got it together again. Yeah, I remember calling
after the rain delay, I got it together.
Right. I remember calling my 99-year-old great-aunt Mary, lifelong Cubs fan who grew up listening to WGN's broadcast of the Cubs, and just sharing that moment with her. It was so emotional, wasn't it? I just let's bring you back to that call, the final seconds, the final game, as Cubs fans everywhere held our collective breath and waited for the announcement.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series! Bryant makes the play! It's over! And the Cubs have finally won it all! 8-7-10!
Joe Buck. Andy, I wonder if David Ross is thinking about that now.
Oh, man. Hey, he's got his name in history, so I think he's gonna be okay.
Yeah, he will be. Not today, though, probably. Yeah. All right, let's move on to another sports story. I guess this is a bad week for guys in charge of sports teams, isn't it, Anna?
Yeah, you go back to 2018, you got another memory. A lot of us were super stunned by this announcement, the Blackhawks making the announcement that they were firing coach Joel Quenneville. I don't know who was more stunned, the fans or the players. 10 seasons, 3 Stanley Cups, 16 playoff wins. He had brought the Hawks, 76 playoff wins, I should say, brought the Hawks to 9 playoff appearances. Just a stunning record. And coach, we just loved him. We loved Coach Q, right? And then here was the news that it was no more. He nurtured the playing careers of 2 of the league's brightest young stars, don't forget, Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves. I just remember the looks on their faces in the news conference after. It looked like someone had died. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was a stunning thing, but Stan Bowman made the announcement that the Hawks were in a rut and playing complacently, and that they needed to kickstart the team, and this was the decision they were making. So that was it. I guess this is just the way it goes in sports, though, but still love the Coach Q, I suppose.
And finally, starting this day in 1955, you could ask Ann Landers, couldn't you?
This was great. 1955, the backstory here, the advice column, Ann Landers, featuring Epi Lederer, debuted at the Chicago Sun-Times this week. But Epi wasn't the first Ann Landers. It was a pseudonym chosen by a Chicago nurse who was originally penning the column, then decided to not do it anymore. So Epi joined the Sun-Times contest, where they asked you to write a column, an advice column. And she was the only one to include expert advice and cite studies on the topic she was giving advice about. And they hired her. A few months later, after she got the job as Ann Landers, her twin sister, Pauline, decided she wanted the same job. So she launched a competing column under the pseudonym Abigail Van Buren, or Dear Abby. And the two sisters had a little bit of a falling out over the competition, and they didn't really love that. But nonetheless, both of them became extremely successful, syndicated columnists, legends, and dished out a lot of advice for decades. A lot of people relied on it.
I used to do a bit called the BS Love Counselor. I don't know that Epi was fond of that. I interviewed her once, and but she had a pretty good sense of humor.
We'll she seemed to.
Talk next Wednesday. Thanks, Santa DeVontis.
Thanks,
this week in Chicago history.